94 DJW mobile.
M0TR at home.
Well, how you doing? You enjoying this pre-spring cool days, the last of the cool days before spring gets here?
Thanking Mother Nature and the good Lord that it didn't get colder, I don't think it would have got the peaches because we're not far from the peach farm here, as you all know, and we got down to 31, but I'll tell you what, it got awful close, but I didn't see any frost on my neighbor's roof or on the grass, and we went up and talked to the folks that own the peach farm there day before yesterday, and they were out checking it. They said as long as there was a little breeze and doesn't get below, I think they said 27, that everything should survive all right. I love them peaches, Dave.
Buy a field of peach trees. As pink as it could be, the blossoms are still on there. It looked like they hung in there without a problem last night. Now, I think that was the coldest night we've had since they blossomed. 29, I think, is what it got down to at my house in the morning. It was 29. I did the same thing you did. I looked out on the rooftops this morning to see if there was any frost, and no frost, because I already put grass seed out. I put grass seed out about 4 days ago, and I've been watering it, so I didn't want any frost either, because, you know, grass seed, that stuff's not cheap either.
We got a big old bag of it. I don't know how many times a year because Amy orders it. We just put it out, but we just put out fertilizer last week, and then we put out all the stuff for fire ants and all of that. It was a spectracide something, wasn't it, Bernice? And boy, it rained the very next day, so that was nice. Worked out great. But our lawn looks like a picture. A friend of mine dropped in the other day, and he said, "What are you trying for, the lawn of the year?" He lives up on top of the hill there. But, they got so much riding on that down here. And last year they lost so much. And I guess Georgia lost almost the whole crop. But Carol, whose kids own it, said that it was like last year, like 80%. But I think it wound up a little better than that.
I feel for those guys. It's like all pins and needles this time of the year for those guys. Either they can get a boomer crop, or it's another whole year they have to wait.
Yeah, farmers got a rough life. I know Bernice's mom didn't believe in fertilizer, and I thought, oh my, that wasn't a good thing. And she had 5 kids to take care of after Bernice's dad died when she was 2. And, but you're not going to change the mind of a hard-headed German, I'll tell you that. Well, I was just reading a Newsweek magazine I get on FlightAware, and I found something interesting. We was talking about airplanes. I didn't know it, but these airlines, you know, people overlook the tires, but I don't. I always kind of look at them if I get close to them. And they don't buy the tires, Dave. They lease them. And then after so many landings, they send them back in and they retread them. You know, when I was a real young kid in my 20s, I'd buy retreads for like 10 or 15 bucks for my old truck. They weren't the best in the world, but they'd work. You know, I didn't drive it fast. It was an old 53 Chevy. But I didn't know they leased them. And then they're $2,500 to $3,500 a piece. And they say they inflate them in a carburetor.
I think Michelin used to make those airline tires, too. I don't know if they still do it or not. But they, the fabrication of the everything except the thread is extensive for those tires. That's probably why they do that. Because if you only use them for one set of treads, you would be throwing away perfectly mechanically sound tire, right? Because I think, you know, they're smoking the tires every time they land. So they're not going to get near as many miles as a car does.
And like a Max 9, a 737, its landing speed's over 130 miles an hour, which I knew. I thought about 140, actually. Can have a max weight of nearly 164,000. However, their lifespan is relatively brief. It says Air Canada reveals that main landing gear tires can withstand between 300 and 450 landings before requiring replacements. This variability is due to a different wear and tear experience across various runways, debris, and rocks, pavement fragments, rubber buildup, etc. Interestingly, the tires on the nose gear tasked with steering the aircraft on the ground even wear out faster. The average expected life of an airplane tire is between 12 and 1,500 hours. But, 2,000 to $3,500 a piece. Now, I thought that on the bigger planes that they had motors on them that started them rotating before they landed, but they was talking about that was on a 777, the price of them. But they say that the smoke observed during landings occurs when a wheel remains stationary during flight and contacts the runway, and they got to move quickly to match the speed. Well, yeah, and that causes the smoke, but I'm almost certain that some of those have motors on them that start them turning in order to give it a longer lifespan. Have you heard that?
JW, I may have read that somewhere one time a long time ago, because I seem to remember, but I don't remember the details of it. There's a lot of mass there. Those tires are big. They're a lot bigger when you're standing up next to them than they are when you're looking at them on an airplane. They look like, you know, proportional to the size of the airplane. When you stand up next to them, the top of the tire is probably about chest high. So something to get all of those tires spinning that much would be a lot of mass to haul around on an airplane all the time and only use it for landing. The motors and batteries and all the cables to get them spinning, I don't know that the return on the investment would be that much. It might be. I don't know.
It sends your LTR. You got a good point. Yeah. Now, with these permanent magnet motors now, it wouldn't be as much, but you'd still have to have the alternators on the plane. They'd have to be capable of generating enough power to spin them. So I am not sure of that. But I thought in the old days, like the 747, different ones, they did that. But I'm probably wrong, because after what you said, it makes you think about that. But they are in an important part of the plane, that's for sure. Well, we was in Dayton, Ohio at the United States Air Force Museum. And someplace in my old computers, I got a picture of Bernice standing next to the tire, which was the largest ever manufactured, and I don't know who manufactured it. I was thinking Goodyear, Goodrich, but it was a B-36, Dave, and I think that's the largest bomber they ever built as far as wingspan, and it was built for nuclear, carrying the bombs, of course, after the B-29. But that B-36 was an enormous plane. But that tire on there was the largest aircraft tire ever built, and it was way above her head.
One that big. I've seen the Earth Movers tires, you know, that are as big as your house, or bigger than your house. Even laying on its side, its footprint would be as big as a lot of houses. But, you know, that's the ones they use up in the gold mines up in Alaska. But those things are expensive, too. But they're getting gold out of the ground, so they can afford it. You know, the ones I'm talking about, the dump trucks, the truck itself is probably bigger than a house.
Oh, absolutely. One time when I was between jobs, I applied at a place in Joplin, Missouri. And at that time, they had these big LED displays of those earth-moving trucks. And this old boy had his own private business down there, and he had the patent on it, apparently. But he had rooms full of ladies there and, that were assembling these with the readouts. They were LED at the time. And whenever the shovel would drop those loads of whatever aggregate they were putting in them, those earth movers, which are gargantuan, it would weigh it. And that was kind of interesting, but there was no job openings there at the time. I was just bouncing around trying to get credit for it at the time because, to be honest with you, I was going through chemotherapy and I didn't particularly want to go to work yet.
Out just to see what was there, not necessarily interested in picking something up right at that moment in time. I can relate to that.
Yeah, pretty sick, Dave, with that stuff. It's not fun at all. But people have been through a lot worse, I'm sure. But, it was still pretty interesting. Then I went to a place that I actually wanted a job, and I went in there, and Bernice was out in the car, and I went to the human relations department and personnel, and I was thinking that I'd just drop off my resume and then leave. Well, the plant manager there saw the resume, the maintenance manager, I forget what they call him, but at any rate, he liked that, and so he took it back and let another manager see it. I was there 8 hours, just about, all day, and poor Bernice was sitting out in the car, and I finally got to the very last one, and I forget what his position was, and he took my resume and he read it, and he tossed it back, and he said, "No, you'd be bored, Tom." No, I won't be bored, not for about $20 an hour. At that time, that was good money. And they made milk in these lines, and they took me all through the plant and showed me the process. But these milks and different things that they made there could be stored for up to a year out in the desert and still be good for our troops, and that was mainly what it was being made for, Dave. A year before it would spoil. That was kind of interesting. But everything, all the machines were behind shields. And if you walked in there, they had to irrigate the whole line again with some kind of chemicals in that to sanitize it. Even if you went in there to replace a photocell or something, that was kind of interesting.
Telling me one time that you can do milk, you can put milk, as long as you don't get it cold, as long as you leave it at room temperature and you seal it so there's no air in it. He was telling me it would last for weeks and weeks and weeks until you opened it and exposed it to air and got it cold, and then the countdown starts on when it's going to spoil. I've never tried that, but he said sometimes he buys it and it's when it's still warm, and they leave it there for months. And then they'll go get it and start using it. Once they start using it, then the clock starts ticking on it.
Well, this would last up to a year, and it was mainly, for people in Iraq, out in the desert, and different things like that, I guess. But it was a real letdown after everyone in the plant that interviewed me. You got just what we want. Yeah, you're great. Then they took me in, and they let the maintenance team question me. And then when they went back and got to the, I forget the title they give those guys, it's overall of maintenance, but he didn't look at it hardly, and he read the first page or two, and you'd be bored, Tom. I was just crushed, and there was Bernie sitting out there in the hot car for hours and hours, and everybody was happy, and I got this job. And then get turned down. It really was a letdown. Oh, well, you live and you learn.
Peace. That's a lot of patience to be waiting in the car that long. I don't know that I could do that. Anyway, Tom, I am pulling in the driveway, so good talking to you. I appreciate the ride home. Enjoyed it. N0TR W4DJW.
Okay, Dave. Sorry if I bored you, but that just brought to mind about that. The automated processes they had was just incredible there. Anyways, I wound up with a good job down there at a printing place. Take care, Dave. W4DJW in 0GR73.